This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are delighted to have Gerald Renner and Jason Berry with us. The topic is somewhat more troubling. The topic that you address in your book, Vows of Silence, is a troublesome one. It is about power. It is about sexual abuse. It is about trouble in a very big institution in the world. And I think Bill's right. I think some of us would be well served to hear from you. How does this work, Catholic Church?
And you say somewhere in there that it's, you know, the sort of the last functioning monarchy, which puts things in a in an unusual perspective.
Well, I think in the United States, we certainly have the presumptions of democracy always with us. And we know, for example, that if a local judge is on the take, if the system works as it should, the district attorney or the U.S. attorney will go in and indict the guy, and then the system will do its work, removing a judge who was in a position of authority. In the Vatican, when a bishop becomes a cardinal, he takes what is called a pontifical vow, a vow to the sovereign pontiff of the church, in which he pledges not to allow scandalous information to come public, to make sure that the church is protected from attacks, if you will, based on scandal.
This is part of his vows as a cardinal?
Yes, yes. And one has to understand this historically. There are many instances in church history of church leaders or ordinary priests being wrongfully attacked because of hatred toward Catholicism. I mean, in Birmingham, Alabama, in the 1920s, there was a beloved pastor who was shot dead on the front steps of the parish by a member of the Ku Klux Klan. I can remember as
anti-Catholic, not anti-black in that instance.
Absolutely. I can remember as recently as 1985 watching Jimmy Swaggart on television railing against the Catholic Church. Certainly he had his own demons, we now know. But I think it is this culture of secrecy that so permeates the governing layers of the Catholic hierarchy that has been hand in glove, if you will, part of the problem, part of the crisis in the church. And that's what we tried to explore in this book, the way in which the logic of secrecy works in preventing information from getting out, and more so, what that mentality of concealment does to men of the cloth who are presumed to speak the gospel, to speak the word, to speak the truth.
So I read that vow, and it struck me, particularly in the context of your book, as being problematical. But it's also easy to look at it historically and say, well, you can read it as if the responsibility is to prevent any actions that would tend to make that happen.
To make a scandal happen?
To allow a scandal to occur. Which gets into the dangers that come when people are both making the rules and interpreting the rules and enforcing the rules. And it seems to me that, and this goes, I'm still interested in how the hierarchy works, to the institutional correctives for abuse. Do they exist? Do they exist effectively?
Gerald Renner?
I think one of the mystique of secrecy has come out of the medieval ages and permeates the Catholic Church. I was a spokesman for the U.S. Catholic bishops for 2 years, in 65 to 67, but learned pretty quickly that as a layman, I wasn't being included in what's happening. Half the bishops felt my job was to keep stuff out of the public, and the other half to place favorable stories.
And how did you see it?
Well, it was just this whole secrecy business, and I went on into other journalism afterwards. I knew nothing at the time about the sexual abuse, but that's what happened when the bishops would start transferring a priest from parish to parish. And it was this whole veil of secrecy that surrounded this that wasn't uncovered until journalists such as Jason Berry got onto it in Louisiana and others eventually around the country, culminating in the Boston Globe's expose in 2002. What they showed, what the Boston Globe showed, they got through a courageous judge, they were able to get the documents behind these cases. And I think Catholics were just shocked at the cavalier way bishops treated the victims. And they were very solicitous of the abusers. They didn't lift a finger to find other victims. But that could only happen because of the secrecy.
And secrecy twice over. Yes, Bill, we'll talk about the hierarchy. And you used a phrase that I'd not seen before, that the police in, I don't know, I think it was Chicago, called it tight collar crime. That it was also the whole system worked against the victim, against what is known in other parts of the world as transparency.
Well, that's quite correct, Paula, but let's also be fair in the way we apportion out criticism. As recently as 20 years ago, there were very few cases of prosecutors indicting pedophiles. It was the taboo that people did not speak about. The abuse of children was something that society barely recognized. One would know certainly that it was a crime, and yet it took a great deal of head-turning in the media and in the legal system before people began to be prosecuted. So, yes, the police did take men when they were caught, priests that is, and turn them back to the bishop. Those were tight-collar cases. And in many large cities, especially where you had an Irish or Italian Catholic power structure, judges, cops, lawyers, state representatives, that was just the way it was done.
You refer several times in this context to the common law traditions in the English, particularly in the English-speaking countries. And it seems that that common law tradition has certain implications, particularly in those countries, but also the conflict or the discontinuity between that and the Italian and the church tradition is genuinely confusing to the hierarchy, to the Vatican, to the cardinals, and ultimately to the Pope.
That's very true. Most of the cases that sort of exploded into the public consciousness, beginning in the early 1990s, there were some here in the United States, but as an international phenomenon, encompassing Ireland, Great Britain, Canada, and certainly Australia, there was a wave of these cases in the 1990s because these countries sharing a base in common law give attorneys the right to what is called legal discovery, meaning you can send a subpoena to the person or institution you're suing and you can get documents from them.
And they have to give it to you.
And they have to give it to you. And if it's found that they are destroying documents, they can be prosecuted for destruction of evidence. In contrast, the Italian legal system is very different. It is built on the notion that a magistrate, a functioning judge, questions people in the courtroom and sort of guides the way in which a civil case or a criminal case unfolds. And that's not to be cynical about it. I'm simply stating it as a fact. I'm not an attorney myself, but I interviewed attorneys during the time when I was in Italy doing research, as did Jerry when he was there. And what we found were only 19 priests in all of Italy who had been accused of abusing children sexually.
And that was a period of over, what, 10, 12 years?
Well, actually, yeah, closer to 15, I think, or 20. But what is so
is that they weren't accused or they weren't doing it?
Well, no, these were different cases. Some were prosecuted, some were accused. Mm-hmm. But these were men who were prominently identified through the legal system and thus in the newspapers. I mean, most of these sources we got were from newspaper articles. And with assistance from a very capable young man who did a web search in Italy on our behalf. And when the Vatican does not see an issue in the Italian media, it looks to the United States and these other countries with an air of detachment.
For a long time, this was called an American problem. And then when it started popping up in the other English-speaking countries, it was called an Anglo-Saxon problem. And yet it's a universal problem. This is a frailty that found in all nations and nationalities.
I found myself reading this and thinking of, you mentioned medieval, of that time when the church was a parallel temporal power. Mm-hmm. And the impression is that in the minds, at least, of some of the people, and particularly the conservatives, and that's a big issue in what you talk about, that mindset, that view of who has the authority is still very much intact.
Yeah.
Jason?
Well, I think there is a certain temperament, an orthodox temperament, which is not to say all orthodox believers feel this way, that we support the power structure. I suppose hierarchy would be the word that an orthodox believer would say. I'm using a journalistic term. We support the power structure because it is the Catholic Church and it is the oldest church in Christendom. And one could cite other reasons for that. I, as a Catholic, as a discerning critical thinker, certainly want my bishop to be someone that I revere and respect. But if he is not living up to the job, I think we have a responsibility to speak out and ask questions. And I think all too many of the defenders, for example, of Father Maciel, the head of the Legion of Christ, are people who want the church to be the way it was, say, in the 1950s, when there was this unanimity about being Catholic. We live in a much more fluid age, and I think we all have to be honest in acknowledging what has happened.
This is Jason Berry. Gerald Renner, would you let me invite you to begin the next segment when we return in just a moment? This is the Paula Gordon Show. I'll keep this quick. We'll be back in a moment. Please be with us.